This episode is made possible by Nielsen. Sharpen your media planning with Nielsen's Upfronts, New Fronts guide. Whether it's linear TV or streaming, Nielsen helps you optimize reach and impact. Visit Nielsen.com for more information.
Sports leagues theoretically could benefit from this because it could bring in another bidder of rights and, you know, it could end up being a good thing, but there's no guarantee they're all going to view it that way. There's a lot of different leagues involved, so there's a lot of different entities that could challenge this and tank it before it ever arrives.
Hey gang, it's Thursday, March 7th. Ross and listeners, welcome to the Behind the Numbers Daily, an e-marketer podcast made possible by Nielsen. I'm Marcus. Today I'm joined by one of our senior analysts who covers everything digital advertising and media for us. He's based just north of New York City. It's Ross Benish.
Hey Marcus.
Hey fella. Thanks for hanging out today. Today's fact is talking about the largest animal on Earth, which is the blue whale. So, I didn't know much about the blue whale, Ross, I'm going to be honest.
Yeah, I don't either.
I don't know why I would know much about it, but it is the largest animal on Earth. So maybe I'm surprised it's not the largest, the smallest, the fastest, the slowest. I feel like those things are talked about quite a lot, but I had no idea any of these facts about the blue whale. So they can grow to be around 100 feet long. So for context, that's 2.5 buses end to end. This is why I don't go in the ocean.
Oh yeah, it's terrifying.
Can you imagine the length of three buses swimming at you? Nope. The whale weighs 300,000 pounds. That's 25 elephants. The heart of the blue whale is 5 feet long and weighs 400 pounds. Just the heart. They can live until they're about 90, which is very long. This one's heartbreaking, though. Sadly, there are only about 10 to 20,000 left in the ocean, or the oceans, not one specific ocean. There are a lot more, but early 1900 to 1960, I think a lot of them were hunted and killed. 10 to 20,000 left. But anyway, some facts on the blue whale. Fascinating. I'm still not going in the ocean. I'm too big. Today's real topic, Disney's next moves. In today's episode, first in the lead, we'll cover Disney. Then for another news, we'll discuss where Roku stands at the minute and the significance of a huge YouTube premium milestone. But we start, Ross, with the lead. We'll set the table in case folks haven't been paying attention to how they've been doing recently performance-wise. Looking at their earnings, our briefings writer Daniel Konstantinovich explains that the company made $24 billion in revenues in their latest quarter. That's on par with the same quarter a year ago. Net income for the quarter was nearly $2 billion. That's up from $1.3 billion the previous year, so that's much better. And streaming losses were around $200 million, so they still lost money, but that's drastically better than the over $1 billion that they lost a year ago. So that's the financial picture for the company. But we're going to start, Ross, with this huge deal that ESPN, Disney by proxy, is a part of. Huge streaming deal. ESPN, Fox, and Warner Brothers Discovery recently saying they're going to combine their sports content into a giant sports streaming service by this coming fall in time for the NFL and NBA seasons. The new streaming product combines 14 linear networks across the three companies, including channels like ABC, FS1, TNT, ESPN, the SEC Network, and more. The new streaming service will include content from all of the sports leagues, pretty much NFL, NBA, WNBA, MLB, NHL, college sports, NASCAR, etc. Still no name or pricing details. But Ross, looking at this from the, we covered this already, I think it was our Super Bowl episode, looking at all the different players, but looking at it from just the kind of Disney ESPN angle, how does the Fox Warner Brothers deal benefit Disney's ESPN?
Well, ESPN is going to be the anchor of the product. If you look at who has the most valuable sports rights, Disney's sports rights are more valuable than Turner and Fox's combined. And most of the revenue for this product is going to flow toward Disney. I don't think it's been entirely hashed out, but there's been suggestions that even though each company owns a third, the revenue will be apportioned kind of like how the cable subscriber fees are for each channel. Mm-hmm, so, you know, it definitely costs more to have the amount of dollars that ESPN gets per cable subscriber is definitely higher than like, you know, TNT or FS1. So, yeah. You know, if this product takes off, it's only going to further cement ESPN as the established sports service, you know, because if anyone's chipping away at ESPN right now, it's the companies that aren't included in this, like Amazon.
Right. Right. Yeah. In terms of the splits, that's going to be interesting to see how they divvy up the dollars, because you're right. Yeah. Just in terms of sheer volume of channels, Disney is contributing more. So just to break it down.
It's not even just channels either. Like the Turner channels aren't even sports channels. Like TNT and TBS aren't necessarily sports channels. Like TNT might have a few NBA games on.
They have, exactly.
You know what I mean? But yes, most of their programming isn't sports. So like, I mean, if it was a tricycle, the Turner leg would be a very weak leg, you know, and the Disney one is like so much more dominant.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah. Warner Brothers Discovery, they've got TNT, TBS, and True TV.
True TV, that's like 15 March Madness games. That's the only sports they do in the entire year.
Fox has Fox. Then they've got FS1, FS2, and the Big Ten Network. So that's about seven channels combined with Fox and Warner Brothers Discovery. And then Disney has the rest. ESPN, ESPN2, ESPNU, ESPN News, ESPN Plus, ABC, SEC Network, and the ACC Network as well. So bringing a lot more to the party than the other two players. Ross, they also announced Disney, and therefore ESPN, that a direct-to-consumer ESPN streaming service will launch in the fall of next year, 2025, that will include personalization features and also access to sports betting platform ESPN Bet. Obviously, there's ESPN Plus, but that doesn't contain all the content that the traditional kind of cable version of ESPN has. But this new standalone version will. It'll be taking ESPN from your cable bundle, from your TVs, and putting it into a standalone streaming package. Ross, how do you expect the standalone ESPN streaming service to be received next year, I guess?
Well, initially, it'll be received very well because it'll be sold cheaply and they'll operate at a loss. So consumers will probably think, this is awesome. I'm getting all of ESPN for like really cheap, just like you used to be able to get Sling TV for like $20 back in, you know, 2016. And then over time, ESPN's going to raise it to around its true price and people will complain and they'll be stuck with the same problem that they have now with cable.
Yeah. It's been a bit of a turnaround at ESPN. They were struggling, but their operating income is in the black again. So that's positive for ESPN. They're also interesting to see that they'll probably add fantasy sports to this channel as well, Ross, because like I said, they're going to be having ESPN Bet available through this standalone product. I'm sure they'll throw fantasy in there as well. So it's going to have multiple facets, this standalone service, trying to keep folks engaged as much as possible. But it is further out. You were saying to me before we hit record that you're not convinced that it will actually happen.
Well, I'm not convinced that both services are going to launch. Like, so to have the sports streaming venture and the ESPN standalone app both coming out not that far apart, mm-hmm. I suspect one of them will not end up being sold as advertised. The sports streaming venture is more likely to have issues mm-hmm. due to, you got to get frenemies to work together to start with. And then you just have a massive infrastructure overhaul to get this done. But there's so many legal issues that could tank this. So, the Justice Department could look into it as this is a monopoly because you have the holders of the most lucrative sports rights, you know, banding together. Is that deemed anti-competitive? Mm-hmm. The cable and satellite companies are taking issue. Like Fubo already filed a lawsuit for this reason, because if you're cutting out the distributors, the distributors aren't going to like it. Mm-hmm. You might see challenges from other TV networks that aren't included. The local affiliates of some of the networks that are included already may be upset. So Fox and ABC sports will be on here, but if you're like Nexstar or Gray or Sinclair station that owns that's a local affiliate, you know, it's not clear how you're going to benefit. And local affiliates have been a huge part of sports broadcasting for these companies for years. So, you know, they may have a challenge. The sports leagues, the NFL didn't know this was going to happen until like right before they announced it, which is insane. Like, that's like, I don't know why you would poke your biggest partner in the eye like that. So some sports leagues theoretically could benefit from this because it could bring in another bidder of rights and, you know, it could end up being a good thing, but there's no guarantee they're all going to view it that way. There's a lot of different leagues involved. So there's a lot of places, a lot of different entities that could challenge this and tank it before it ever arrives.
Yeah, it was odd that they hadn't, Fox, Warner Brothers Discovery, and Disney ESPN hadn't informed the NBA or NFL that they were going to be doing this until basically when they announced it. It does seem like more of a, they thought maybe there was going to be a problem and they'd rather ask for forgiveness than permission, perhaps. Talking about a monopoly, these guys getting together and will actually go through. City analyst expecting the new super sports streaming service to encompass about 55% of US sports rights. This was noted in a Wall Street Journal article by Joe Flint and Isabella Simonetti.
You know, something about the anti-competitive thing, though. It would be like not in the consumer interest if, let's say, this gets struck down for being anti-competitive, and then the result is the tech giants just swoop in and get the sports rights. Like, oh, we can't let the struggling TV networks work together. You know, Amazon and Apple have at it because, you know, they're the ones who need the help from anti-competition.
True. Looking at Disney's streaming efforts, Disney Plus in particular, checking in on those numbers, Robbie Wellen of the Journal was writing that the number of domestic Disney Plus subscribers fell slightly to 46 million, likely the result of price increases, he was saying, but the service lost fewer subscribers than Wall Street analysts had predicted. Overall, global subscribers to Disney Plus, including its Hotstar service in India, also fell slightly to 149 million from 150 year on year. And now, Ross, there are plans to combine the Disney Plus and Hulu brands or content under the same app starting in this month, I think, in March. What do you expect to see from Disney's one-app experience that will combine Disney Plus and Hulu?
Well, Disney Plus will end up being the brand that matters more than Hulu. They're going to push Disney Plus harder, so you're going to have more people accessing content or spending more time with Disney Plus. I think that's going to take some share away from Hulu, but I guess that's somewhat academic because now Hulu is completely controlled by Disney, so it's still going to the same company. It's not divvied up among, you know, three different companies like it had been in years past. And you're going to see some weird stuff happen with the Disney Plus branding because, like, Disney Plus, since it launched, it was limited to, like, the goody two-shoes stuff that Disney has always released. You know, like, you could watch, you know, old movies like Cinderella and Fox and Hound and, you know, new series based on Monsters, Inc. And you know, very family-friendly. Now you could stream movies that are on Hulu that are more for adults, like World's Greatest Dad, which is a very dark comedy starring Robin Williams. You can watch that on Disney Plus now, which is weird. But
yeah,
going with like kid-friendly or family-friendly content that's primarily aimed at kids will only get Disney Plus so far to become, you know, a broader service competing in time spent with like Netflix and Prime Video. They do need the R-rated, you know, mature videos and films.
So do you think they're going to keep the Hulu brand just inside the Disney Plus app? Is that what you foresee?
Yeah, and I think Hulu's still going to be a... You could still subscribe to Hulu a la carte if you so choose.
Right, but you don't have to have them both.
Expect more of it to get folded into Disney Plus, and that probably would have happened sooner if, you know, they had controlled Hulu even sooner. You know, this is happening now because they had to, you know, wait for everything with Comcast's ownership of Hulu to clear.
Yeah. They'd had 2/3 and Comcast had 1/3 and Disney just bought the rest of Hulu. So now it can do what it wants with it. Final question, Ross, in the lead, talking about Disney and gaming. So Disney is investing $1.5 billion into Fortnite creator Epic Games in the company's most significant venture into gaming yet, writes our Daniel Konstantinovich. Two companies will build what they're calling an expansive and open games and entertainment universe that offers opportunities for folks to play, watch, shop, and engage with content, characters, and stories from Disney, Pixar, Marvel, Star Wars, Avatar, and more. So a bunch of the different Disney brands. Daniel reminds us that Disney was once a publisher of significant games, but in recent years, it stuck to licensing out its properties to established large-budget studios to great success, saying that hands-off approach let Disney skirt the more uncomfortable aspects of video game development, their long, volatile production schedules that can be incredibly costly to maintain. But now Disney is getting directly invested in the process. So Ross, the question is, why is Disney choosing to invest so much in Epic Games now?
Video games make more revenue than film, television, music combined, and they are a very popular entertainment format for young people. So, you know, if you want to become less dependent upon box office and getting the eyes...
Which is struggling.
Yeah. Investing in games is, you know, a pretty reasonable thing to do.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And they've worked together before. Disney and Fortnite have collaborated in the past. Andrew Webster of The Verge noting that back in 2020, there was an entire Marvel-themed season in the Fortnite Battle Royale game. Marvel, obviously owned by Disney. That's all we've got time for the lead. Time for the second half of the show, Ross. Today in other news, where does Roku stand at the minute? And YouTube Premium hits a heck of a milestone. Story one, where does Roku stand at the minute? Roku is navigating a challenging landscape in the streaming and advertising sectors, facing intense competition for ad dollars from giants like Netflix and Amazon Prime Video, writes our senior director of briefings, Jeremy Goldman. Roku's shares were down 20% recently following not so great earnings and also Walmart's purchase of Vizio. But Ross, what do you make of Roku's current market position?
Roku is still the most popular connected TV operating system in the United States. Vizio is going to eat into some of that share because they're going to benefit from Walmart's distribution. You know, Amazon has already been gaining some market share by pushing its Fire operating system into more TV brands. But Roku isn't, it's not like they've gone away or anything. You know, I think some of the reaction's been a little dramatic. They still control the home screen for so many people.
Yeah. Yeah, very true. And according to our numbers, they just make the top 10 in terms of digital ad players. We have Roku basically joint 10th with Pinterest in terms of the largest US digital ad players, with just under 1% of the total US digital ad pie, just for Roku, making $2.5 billion this year and growing a very healthy 16%. Story two, YouTube Premium hits 100 million subscribers, showing an appetite for ad-free video, suggests our analyst Daniel Konstantinovich. He explains that launched back in 2015, a standard subscription to YouTube Premium includes access to both ad-free YouTube viewing, no ads, and YouTube Music for $14 a month, which makes YouTube Premium. This figure does include folks on free trials, though. Daniel notes that its push to increase ad-free YouTube Premium subscriptions puts it at odds with the ad-supported push its competitors have made. Ross, to you, what's the takeaway of this 100 million subscriber milestone from YouTube Premium?
Most streaming services are becoming hybrid. YouTube is diversifying away from being solely dependent on ads in a way that Netflix is diversifying away from being solely dependent upon subscription revenue. YouTube still generates much more advertising revenue than it does for subscriptions, and Netflix does much more subscriptions than it does advertising. But Netflix is walking YouTube's way, YouTube is walking Netflix's way, and they're meeting in the middle, like that 1990s country song.
Excellent point. That's all we've got time for this episode. Thank you, Ross, for hanging out today, my friend.
Thanks, Marcus.
Yes, indeed. Thank you to Victoria, who edits the show. James, he copy edits it. Stuart runs the team, and Sophie does all of our social media. Thank you to them. Thank you to everyone for listening in, taking a bit of time out of your day to hang out with us. We hope to see you tomorrow for the Behind the Numbers Weekly Listen. That's an eMarketer video podcast made possible by Nielsen.